Episode 16 for Owl and Fowl's Norwich City Football Club We Meet Again series. And Fowl, this is an Owl and Fowl first, isn't it? Do you want to break the news to our listeners?
It is. We're having to utilise modern technology. And we're recording this from 200 miles apart, or roughly, wherever it is, unfortunately, aren't we? Via Zoom.
We are. Fowl's in the top right corner of my laptop, rather than in his kitchen in front of me.
I mean, I'm still in my kitchen, or roughly, or the same place as normal, but, you know, I'm not staring at you. Well, I am staring at you, but via a computer monitor.
I wasn't too sure. We had two options, really, on this. I think we were either going to postpone them and then do them when on the return fixtures in the new year, or we were going to give it a crack over Zoom. Fowl was quite keen to keep our sort of public happy. They need their fix, don't they?
This is it. The fans need it. I mean, they could have. They've obviously chosen not to. I mean, I would have chosen for them not to keep them.
Yeah.
I think we're in a bit of a roll now. You know, we're starting to get the publicity out there. A lot of people almost knocking down the doors to know when the next one's going to be out. Last week, when I talked about it on Facebook, I think we had 2 likes on it. So there's a lot. We want to keep that momentum going.
Phil, we're now being downloaded in, I think, 18 different countries now.
So you were saying.
Around the globe.
And we've had almost as many downloads in New Zealand as we have had in Norwich, haven't we?
We have. Yeah, we still haven't cracked the homelands yet.
No.
I've got an advert lined up for the Pinken, Fowl. So
let's see how that goes.
So hopefully that could raise the profile. Fowl's very customer-driven, so he was quite keen for us to keep providing a service, you know.
Absolutely.
It obviously boosts morale to people during these difficult times, doesn't it?
Exactly, absolutely. And during a lockdown, it's important that we keep the morale of the nation up, so it's doing a little bit.
Exactly. You know, you've got to dig in, haven't you, when times are tough. There was no chance of us shirking our duties, was there?
Exactly. It's our duty, and we're pleased to do it.
Yes, so we'll see how this goes. Obviously, if the technology doesn't quite work, we might have to resort to plan B, but we'll give it a crack. So this is a series where we're well into it now, where we look back at the history between Norwich City and our next opponents. It's been a couple of weeks since we last sat down and did our previous records. Just a quick catch up with you, Phil. I heard a rumour that you've been hanging out with a Norwich City Football Club Hall of Famer.
Yes, this is true.
Over a latte, was it?
Oh, this is true. The Sunday before lockdown hit in, me and my gym buds. My gym buddies.
So Muscle Beach, does that sound?
Yeah, I mean, this is it. I mean, obviously, most of you probably don't know me out there. And obviously, Alan can see me, but I'm kind of somewhere between like The Rock and Arnold Schwarzenegger in his heyday.
That's the rock and hard place.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how much I like to hit the gym. So it would come as no surprise to anyone who knows me. Obviously, I'm a bit of a gym rat. But we were
At this point, the listeners got images of you and your gym buddies supping a power shake. Wearing your muscle vests in Halston.
Well, I actually had a brie and bacon toasty. It's absolutely lovely. And it's great fun. So we were in there having an hour and a drink. And it was a Sunday before lockdown. On a Sunday morning, they'd all been out for a run. I don't do running. That's not going to happen for me. So I just met them for a coffee afterwards.
Just had breakfast.
Exactly. Yeah, I went down for a coffee afterwards and some bacon. Anyway, this guy walked in with a mask on, obviously, standard practice these days. And it had a very, like a smiley face one. And he seemed like quite a lively character, like life and soul kind of chap.
Is it a mask or a balaclava?
could be
back in, can't they?
It could be, yeah. I mean, this is it. Like, literally a year ago, if you went to a bank wearing a balaclava, you would have got arrested. Now you're arrested if you're not wearing one. It's a real juxtaposition. But no, he walked in and he was like quite a larger-than-life character. I didn't recognise him and I didn't know who he was until after I Googled him, but he basically started chatting to us and the subject of him being a footballer came up quite quickly. And from what I can gather, he does like to bring that up quite a lot. But he's a really nice guy.
Play, I would.
Yeah, too right. Yeah. He handed us his fake £50 note with his face on. And it is Ollie Burton.
Yeah.
He played a number of games for Norwich. Not that many for a Hall of Famer, I don't think. Only about 60 or 70, wasn't it?
Yeah, I can't remember the stats. I think he played. I did have a quick look in the book, Fowl.
Yeah.
Alan Kemp's Norwich City Football Club Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I've got it sitting over there.
Still available.
Yeah.
Anyway, I did look up. He played for us in the early 60s, so he was part of the team that I think got promoted into Division 2. But he actually really made his name at Newcastle. I don't know if you mentioned that.
Yeah, no, that's what he said, really. In fact, yeah, he talked more about Newcastle than Norwich.
Yeah. He obviously, I think he was part of the last Newcastle team to win a trophy, the old European Fairs Cup. He's obviously got a lot of connections to Norwich, so he's back in the area.
Yeah, he lives locally, apparently, and he's good friends with Delia Smith and watches the games with her quite often. So, yeah, he's obviously got a lot of connections with the club. And I think that's one thing that I'm very proud of our club, and what I like about it is it does seem to be quite... It respects legacy, doesn't it? It respects our history. And I think it seems to be quite a welcoming club. And a lot of players, you know, like Darren Huckabee, he's got no connection to Norwich other than the fact he played for us. You know, he's not from here. You know, you see like Ewan Roberts, Dean Ashton around still. Like, yeah. They obviously love it around
here. It's an endless
here.
List, really, isn't it? Of people who, yeah, they're not Grant Holt.
You know, exactly. There's another one.
From Norwich, but they just made it their home now, aren't they? And they see Norwich being their club.
Exactly, and it's great to see. You love it.
Yeah, and I've sensed that Ollie's sort of within that camp.
Definitely.
Did you see if he fancied coming onto the show?
You know what? He probably would have done as well. He's a very buoyant character. I'm sure he would have been very interested to talk about his experiences.
You didn't pop the question, did you?
I didn't. I got his autograph, though, which is something. And that was because the gym guys know I'm such an obsessive Norwich fan. They go, get his autograph. And so I did, which is very cool of him. They wanted me to speak to him a bit more, get a photograph. But, you know, I don't like to pester people too much.
Yeah.
Especially since I actually recognise him as well. But, you know, he's obviously, Norwich City Hall of Famer. So I've been hanging out with some famous people.
Brilliant. I can't top that, definitely, in the last couple of weeks. No, I haven't met any Norwich Hall of Famers for a latte.
No.
Unfortunately. General football news, we covered Stoke a few weeks ago, and Tony Pulis is back in the Championship, isn't he? Did you hear that?
Yeah, is he back with Sheffield Wednesday, is he?
He is, yeah.
You know what, I didn't know it'd been confirmed, but I saw that was likely on the cards. Yeah, he is confirmed, yeah, you're quite right.
Fell's just checked, yeah. Which brings us on, it's a link there, Fell, so our next opponent.
Blackburn.
I'm not sure, again, if this is home and away, we're going to be facing another Tony Pulis team. So we know what to expect, don't we?
Well, hopefully it will still be locked down by then, so I'd have to go to the game.
Yeah, you should have to go to that. Yeah, so a real club that lives up to the term sleeping giant, Sheffield Wednesday.
Definitely.
When it appeals, I've got here to the Football and Romantics, a club that's won 4 titles, 3 FA Cups. It's got a very passionate and large supporters base. It's got an absolute iconic stadium in Hillsborough.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll notice this in terms of when we've played them or when they've come to Carrow Road. I'm sure the away end's pretty full
and
pretty noisy as well. They're probably one of the clubs that stick out within the league for the numbers and the noise that they bring.
Yeah, I think both Sheffield teams do, don't they, really, coming to Carrow Road? I think Sheffield's a proper footballing city, isn't it? Yeah, Wednesday are a proper team. And like I say, they really are the quintessential sleeping giants, aren't they?
They are.
Because they have been out of top flight for some time now, haven't they?
I would say probably 20 years now.
Yeah, I reckon.
Going on more than that.
Plus,
They did have a spell in the old third division as well, or League One. They've had tough times. Any other away fans that always impress you? You know, any that stick in mind?
You've got to say Leeds, haven't you? It pains me to say that, but they always come in numbers and they are always up for the fight. I'm not a huge Leeds fan, but you've got to say they put their money where their mouth is in terms of away support. They're always loud and passionate. You've got to say that. Another one that sticks out is actually Celtic. And bearing in mind, we only played them in a friendly. And that must have been, I think that was Adam Drury's testimonial.
That sounds about right, yeah.
And so I went along to that just because it was Adam Drury's testimonial. But I was really impressed with, the Celtic fans came down. They were right on it, up for it. They were, party time in the city all day long. It felt like they were viewing it as, a European tie against...
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to big Norwich up here, but, against Real Madrid or something. It was it felt like they were just there for an absolutely great time. Result didn't matter. They were just party time. So you've got to say fair play to them. In terms of the league, obviously, Ipswich bring big numbers, but, I think, obviously, with the exception rather than the norm on that one for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Wednesday are up there, aren't they?
As is normally the case, last time we played them was back in the Championship winning season. I seem to say this every time, but again, it was 2 memorable games, wasn't it? Was there any games that weren't memorable that year?
I can't remember them.
The away game was memorable in that I think we went 4-0 up at half-time and he missed another penalty.
Yeah, that's exactly
I think it was around about October time, and I think it was the first time that we made that transition from... You mentioned this a few weeks ago, where we seemed to be winning 1-0.
Yeah.
And then suddenly out of nowhere, we score them for fun. And it, I think it started at Hillsborough.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think I was working that day, and I think we actually moved.
You went on holiday.
No, I wasn't on holiday. I was actually working that day. But I remember in the office with my dad, who's also a Norwich fan, so we probably had it on the radio. I remember that game. I'm pretty sure Sheffield United played after us that game. So I think that result put us probably second in the league for a little bit of time. I can't remember now, but...
I've got it down here in my notes. NCFC went top.
So
I'm assuming that was the first time, that it would have been the first time that season that we hit the summit.
But I think that was only temporarily until Sheffield United played later on that day, I think. I watched the highlights, and Sheffield Wednesday looked like a team in disarray at the time. They looked like we played them at the right time. But also, they just could not get near us. We were just absolutely on it that day. I think Dennis Sabeni scored, didn't he, after coming off the bench?
I think it's one of those games that it was a real statement of intent, wasn't it? I think the league kind of started to think something's going on here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Big win, and the sort of win that you just don't really expect away from him in the Championship unless you know, you got a real special side.
Yeah.
Do you remember the home game?
I remember it well. I was there. That was a roller coaster.
Yeah, what drama. So I'm going to mention 3 points to you. You can give me your thoughts. So Sheffield Wednesday scored a worldie that day, didn't they?
Oh, what a goal. Probably the best goal I've ever seen at Carrow Road. That's Forestieri, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's some statement, Phil.
It's up there with that Johnny Howson volley against Forest.
Against Forest, yeah.
Yeah, that was an absolute world. It is just a brilliant, brilliant goal. And it's one of the very few times which I've clapped an opposition goal. It was that good. I think Forest...
It was an equaliser, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it made it 1-1, didn't it? And I think Steepman put us 1-0 up, I believe, off the top of my head.
Yeah. Did he just hit it from 25 yards or something?
I think it was about near 35 yards. I think, basically, he was being shadowed by Tommy Tribal. And Tommy Tribal kind of closed him off quite well, shut his avenue down, got a boot in. And so Forestieri kind of turned away and pushed him further away from goal. And it's one of those things where Tommy Tribal sort of like sat back a little bit, sort of like, okay, that's good, going away from goal, that's where I want you to go, you can go that way.
Get back in position and get our shape together.
Exactly. And he sort of turned and hit it. And from obviously that was going into the river end. So I'm sitting Barkley end and you could just, you're thinking, this is in. You know, this is one of those shots where it just hit it like an absolute bullet and it was looping and dipping and... It was just just phenomenal goal. If anyone out there's not seen it, Google it now.
Look.
No, brilliant.
And then the second point I was going to make to you, a handball, which would have been at the Barkley end. Yeah, talk me through that. No doubt it was a handball, was it?
Well, there's two handballs. There's two controversial moments because their goalkeeper, and I can't remember who their number one is, got injured in the warm-up.
Westwood, was it? Or?
Yeah, I think so, Westwood, and he got injured in the warm-up. And so they already had the reserve goalkeeper in. I know this isn't the handball you're talking about, but in the first half, their second goalkeeper handled the ball outside the area. Yeah, and it was a lot of call for him to be sent off, including from me. And this is another case where sometimes the fans don't know the rules. And apparently it's changed now. It's not an automatic red card if a goalkeeper handles the ball outside the area anymore.
Also, the ref gave the offence?
Yeah, gave the offence and a yellow card
for it.
And all the fans were, that should be a red card. And I was one of them thinking, oh, is this a red card? But apparently that's not the case. And it was deemed that... It could have only been a red card if it was denying a goal scoring opportunity. And
it has to be, doesn't it, by default, if it's the keeper. It has to be a goal scoring opportunity, doesn't it, if the keeper's...
The argument was there was a defender's covering, and that's probably right. Yellow card is probably the right decision. Maybe that's what the rule was all along. I just didn't know it very well. So
that's a strange thing. You think, okay, you've got defender's covering, but you're still back.
Yeah.
It's trying to score, wouldn't you? But...
Exactly. On balance, probably the right decision. But you've got to say that, obviously...
By the letter of the law,
Yeah, and I think there was 1-0 at the time to us, or maybe 1-1, but you'd have thought them going down to 10 men and having no second goal, you know, with an outfield player in goal. Who'd love to see that? That would be absolutely brilliant. And that would have...
Yeah, it's one of those special moments in football. You don't see it much, do you?
Not often enough. And that would have guaranteed us promotion that night as well. But as it turned out, obviously Forestieri hit a worldie. I thought Wednesday, managed by Steve Bruce at the time, weren't they?
Yeah.
I actually thought Wednesday were well on top second half. I thought, not well on top, that's a bit over the top, but like I thought they were probably, they looked a good side.
We talked about this in the Stoke episode, was it? They got nothing to play for, whereas...
I think so.
Nerves kicking in. And the Steve Fletcher ball.
Yeah, that was just the incident the VAR's designed for, isn't it? Which obviously we don't have. And everyone's talking, I mean, it was a blatant handball. We could see it plain as day from where we were. But it wasn't given...
Was it? refresh my memory, he slid in at the back, did he? Back post or across. And did it come up off him and then hit his hand?
If I remember rightly, Krull saved it. So he slid in at the back post, keeper saved it and it bounced back into him. And he sort of pushed it in off the rebound, I believe. So I think Krull made a brilliant save. And it kind of came back into him and he pushed it in of his hand as it's sort of sliding in past him. It was one of those ones where it was a blatant handball. And the only reason it wasn't given was simply because obviously neither referee or linesman saw it. That's the only explanation. Yeah. It was like, you know, people talk about, well, you know, why didn't referee give it? It's like, just didn't see it, obviously. It's that simple.
Yeah, he's got to give it, hasn't he?
It's just a situation like where it's just that's what VAR's designed for. It would have taken 30 seconds, clearly handballed it, not a goal.
And you can't really blame referees. I think it was a bit of an awkward sort of sequence, wasn't it? Like you say, I think he was quite close to Krull's. It would have bounced off Krull, then it would have hit him.
Exactly.
And then went in. And, you know, unless you're in that right position, it's hard to tell what part of his body it hit.
That's exactly it.
Guess what my third point is that I'm going to bring up on that game.
Is it the beautiful, wonderful Super Mario?
Google that one as well, shall we, after this?
I mean, that free kick was brilliant, wasn't it? I mean, perfect. Yeah. He's already done it this season as well, hasn't he, a couple of times.
It's very similar to the which game did he do it this year?
Wickham, didn't he?
Like Wickham, that's it. It was very similar to that, wasn't it, in terms of technique, corner it went in, distance.
Yeah.
What did you think when we got a free kick there? Sort of think this could be it?
Yeah, you did. I mean, Mario's a great free kick taker, so you believed it. I think the Wickham one was slightly closer. The Wickham one was very close, wasn't it? He actually did well on that Wickham one to get it up and down and make it look so easy. It's like, you know, when that Wickham one was given, I thought it's not going to score this because it's too close. And then he just chipped up and down and went, oh, he's going to score it easily. So yeah, this Sheffield one was probably almost like a better range, probably about 5 yards further back, I reckon. And it's sort of like, it just felt like the perfect place for a free kick. Also, interestingly, I think I remember rightly, because we have to be honest here, against Wickham, I'm not going to say that Super Mario dived, but he certainly bought the free kick, didn't he? He stuck his leg out to catch the opposition's leg. And if I remember rightly, he did exactly the same thing against Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah. So, fair enough, though. You've got to do that, haven't you?
I mean, if Stephen Fletcher's goal is going to stand for the handball, you know, it happens in football. You get things you shouldn't get sometimes. Another day he gets booked for diving, you have to say fair enough. But
am I right in thinking it was so late in the game that I think Steve Bruce was complaining that where did that time come from?
I think so. I think it was one of those ones where I think we had, say, 6 minutes of injury time. And I think the free kick incident occurred like in 5 minute 56th second or something.
Yeah.
So clearly by the time everyone has set up and the ball had gone, it was a good minute and a half over injury time. But
although I think managers are a bit naive here, because I think technically the referee can announce 6 minutes, but it's still his call. He doesn't have to. Yeah.
It's a minimum of, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So it's great recalling that game, isn't it? Probably one of the better ones you've seen at Carrow Road over your many years.
Yeah, great one. A lot of drama, a lot of controversy. At the end of the day, result, which is probably fair. Sheffield Wednesday, in all honesty, deserved a point out of that game, at least. They were good that night. They were on it.
Yeah. Didn't make any difference, though, did it? They were marooned in mid-table, weren't they, I think?
Exactly. Yeah. So we were, and, you know, ultimately over the season, we were a far better side than they were. Steve Bruce seemed to get them looking solid. And then
he does what he always does.
Yeah, and then he's disappeared off now. So off to Newcastle now. We're doing fine there. Yeah. Describe him as uninspiring from a fan's point of view, but you've got to say he gets results.
He wasn't as a player, though, was he?
No, he's great,
He was fantastic. Very inspiring as a player for us, actually, in that central defence and civ partnership with Dave Watson.
You've got to say, England's greatest ever uncapped player, I think, is probably what he always gets level with, and I think that's probably fair.
Yeah, and you think if he was around now, he'd be
touching 100 caps. Yeah, exactly,
It's just a different environment now, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, it definitely works. Obviously, caps seem to be given. I'm not saying caps are given out easier now, but it's maybe more of like a rotation of like players in the England squad these
days.
You don't
have to be playing week in, week out in the centre of defence for Man United to get a cap these days. You can be more of a bit part player, can't you?
Exactly. But
that's a whole new podcast, pal.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do it. During the Euros next year, we could do a We Meet Again England special.
Away special, that'd be good. England versus Russia.
Make a note of that.
Oh, Scotland.
Yeah, we're playing Scotland, aren't we? The Euros. Yeah, maybe we should investigate that.
Yeah.
So, time for your favourite bit now. We're going to go back a few, well, over 100 years.
Okay.
So, they were called the Wednesday back then. Do you like that name?
I don't hate it.
Don't bother with the Sheffield.
Yeah.
Just the Wednesday. So, they first visited us in 1908 in the FA Cup. They were cup holders, and they finished fifth in Division One that year.
Okay.
But we beat them 2-0. Now, that game pulled, as you'd expect, pulled a record attendance. This was at our old Newmarket Road, so our very first ground.
Okay.
10,366 people turned up. It was a wake-up call, really. It made Norwich owners realise that the ground had its limitations if it wanted to progress as a club.
Yeah.
They also set a record attendance at our next home, the Nest.
Yeah.
So, again, they turned up at the Nest for an FA Cup tie. 25,000 turned up there.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the final nail in the coffin for our feature at the Nest. I think it was, we talked about it, I think, in the Swansea podcast, that it was a bit of a health and safety
there.
But I wanted to, I mean, we're not going to touch much on this because this is back in the dimmer distant past. But I wanted to sort of imagine how significant that was for Norwich's development, when you think the club in its very early days playing at Newmarket Road, finding its feet, to have the FA Cup holders suddenly come to town and a Division One club as well come to town.
Yeah.
That must have been such a big moment for the club, wasn't it, at that stage of its development?
Oh, absolutely. And I think we talked about this before, haven't we, in terms of like the FA Cup and also promotion relegation. It's sort of the lifeblood. And that's what makes football so great, isn't it? And so it must be brilliant. I remember, obviously, I think it's 10 years ago, almost to the day, isn't it, where Norwich played Poulton Rovers, is it?
Yeah, a little village just outside Bristol.
Yeah, exactly. I remember like Mick Dennis, the journalist, who's also a big Norwich fan and speaks very well on Twitter. I remember him talking about him covering the game and what an effect it had on Poulton Rovers. And that's fantastic, isn't it? Like, you'd love to see it.
It wouldn't have been quite that extreme, but there must have been a bit of an element of that.
Mm.
Norwich going to Poulton would have been similar to when Sheffield Wednesday came to Newmarket Road that time.
Yeah, definitely.
And what it would have done for the club's development. So I guess that would have got a lot of fans on board who probably went to their first ever game.
Yep.
And you know what it's like, isn't it? You go, all you need to do is get fans in for the first time and hopefully they're hooked, aren't they?
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. And that's what it's about. Give them a taste of the football and the excitement and you build from there, don't you?
And 1967, Sheffield Wednesday completed a unique treble.
Okay.
Now, I don't know whether they're the only club to have done this. I doubt it. But they came to Carrow Road for another FA Cup tie, which I think they lost. It meant that they'd played us in all three of our grounds. So we'd hosted them at Newmarket Road, we'd hosted them at the Nest, and we'd hosted them at Carrow Road. So I think that's probably a reasonably unique treble. That game, 1967, it was a noticeable first for us. You're not going to guess this, but it was our first ever appearance on Match of the Day.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And I thought, what a great time to talk about this national institution that is Match of the Day. What do you think of it? Do you were you brought up on it?
Are we talking about the TV song or the Genesis? Oh, sorry, the TV program or Genesis song? I presume it's a program.
I don't know the Genesis song. Music's not my area of expertise.
Oh, so. Your music taste is probably better than mine. You know what? I'm going to be brutally honest. I used to love it. I don't go out my way to watch it anymore.
No, like I'm in the same boat, Phil.
I find I just get annoyed with the punditry in it, to be completely honest. My biggest bugbear with it. The problem is with it is like everything is so overanalyzed now, isn't it? And I just get, especially when Norwich were on there, and, you know, no disrespect to like the likes of Alan Shearer and that lot, because obviously fantastic world-class footballers, you know, they know a lot more than football about me. I'm not trying to deny that at all for a second. But there's no way they could have watched every single game before Match of the Day is on. Yeah. And I remember, like, when Norwich were on there, always last off, obviously, almost. And some of the things they'd be saying, I'm thinking to myself, you've clearly not watched the game.
Yeah.
That's just not what happened in the match. And I get very annoyed with how they sort of, you know, pull part
and I think
decisions.
I used to find that the highlights didn't give the impression of the game itself. So I remember
exactly
looking forward to watching a game that I thought Norwich had dominated, and it looked like we were backs against the wall when I watched the highlights.
100%. It's exactly what I felt. And so particularly when Norwich are Premier League, I tend not to watch it. No, I do watch it. It's not religiously. And I think that the punditry on Match of the Day, as well as all football shows, has been instrumental in VARD, which you now have to have to live with. But traditionally, I always loved it. I mean, obviously, when I was a kid at school, that's what you had to stay up and watch with your dad. And, you know,
it's become part of the national culture in a way, isn't it? That Saturday night, that theme music. I guess it's been diluted by football on telly in general. So I think it used to be the only show on, really.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point.
I guess, you know, I don't normally dip into music, but I guess the same thing's happened with music and Top of the Pops, where it used to be the only show, whereas as soon as you started getting music 24/7 on various mediums, it suddenly loses a lot of its appeal.
Yeah,
I'd say the same with Match of the Day, would you? It's sort of...
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is absolutely it. I mean, you used to like... Top of the Pops was exactly the same. You'd watch it every Thursday night whenever it was on. I remember being at school and I'd always be really excited about it. I'd always, you know, make sure I watch that, make sure I watch Match of the Day. Well, and now it's available so many places. It's diluted, you're right. It's exactly right.
Here's one for you, Phil. You can only appear on one show. Would it have been Top of the Pops or Match of the Day?
I mean, it depends as what, doesn't it? If it's on
Obviously as a performer. You're either on Top of the Pops as a band performing, or you're on Match of the Day because you're playing.
Oh, that's a good question, football. That. I'd probably go on Top of the Pops, if I'm honest with you. But, like, is that controversial on a football podcast? But, I mean, music's my thing.
I guess my question basically was, would you rather be a professional musician or professional footballer, isn't it?
I'm just not convinced that the life of a professional footballer is as good as people make it out to be. I just think... Don't get me wrong.
What do you think a musician is?
The thing is, being a musician is that in theory you can do it your whole life, can't you?
Get your own stadiums, musicians. Stop turning up at ours.
Yeah, all right. I mean, if you can do the rest of your life, but I just think football is such... I just think the environment footballers live in, a competitive environment, I just don't think... I don't think I'd fare well in it, to be fair. I just think you're constantly on the fire and whatever you do is wrong. I'm not sure it's... I think you have to be a certain character to survive as a professional sports person.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm that.
Okay. So moving on, our first win at Hillsborough came on the 8th of April 1975. We beat them 1-0 and it was a massive step towards us getting promoted that season, and it pushed them closer to the trapdoor. They ended that year for the first time ever dropping into Division 3, a place that we knew very well.
Yep.
15th of May 1982, I can just about recall this game.
Yeah, I was one, so hazy for me.
Far, far, far bigger game. Last game of the season. One of those classics with promotion was in the balance. It went down to the final whistle that year. There was an estimated 15,000 away fans travelled up to Sheffield that day. I don't think that's likely to ever be beaten, because obviously in those days there wasn't the restrictions in terms of you had to buy tickets.
Yeah.
You could just turn up and pay on the gate.
Yeah.
There probably wasn't quite the level of segregation back then. So,
yeah.
It was an incredible game in that there was late goals. They scored a late winner. And you should Google this, Phil. But
okay.
There was a fan on the pitch at the time.
We've
got a few things to Google tonight, haven't we?
We have, yeah.
Mario's free kick.
Yeah.
The Forrester goal. But, yeah, Google that. There was actually a fan in the six-yard box who got onto the pitch when Wednesday scored the winner.
Right.
The goal stood.
Okay.
They beat us 2-1, and then it was a case of finding out what happened at Leicester.
Right.
Because if Leicester had won, they would have pipped us. So you can imagine everyone sitting around. It's probably a bit like that classic day in the Premier League when Man U were at Sunderland waiting to find out what was going on at Man City. But... Leicester didn't win, so yeah, we celebrated probably the most dramatic of promotions on the Hillsborough pitch.
Yeah.
Despite a loss. And it got me thinking, Phil, can you recall times of joy in a Norwich City defeat? And the obvious one, we talked about Sunderland, didn't we?
Yeah.
In 2004.
That's the only one I can think of, really.
Is there any times in Carrow Road that you remember where we've lost but you've been... skipping out of the ground with a smile on your face?
There's been games we haven't won, and we've been celebrating because it didn't matter. Like, for example, Coventry, if we talked about this the other week, Coventry.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, say, when we'd already gone up beforehand. I can't remember a situation where we'd lost and then we celebrated afterwards, if that makes sense.
Another interesting little quirk. I think you'll like this one, Phil. So this was the first season of 3 points for a win.
Yeah.
So before that, I don't know if you know, but it used to be 2 points for a win.
Yeah, I did know that, yeah.
One
yeah.
for a draw. So first season, 3 points for a win. We obviously finished third and went up. If that season had been played out the year before under the old 2 points for a win,
yeah,
it would have been Sheffield Wednesday that would have got promoted and not us.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I guess how it the mix between draws and wins. So we were massive beneficiaries of that change.
Yeah. What I wanted, wasn't it? More wins, less draws,
yeah, exactly.
Less negativity.
But I'm going to expand on that a bit more with you in terms of, would you make any other changes to the point system? So I've heard a few things. I've heard points should be based on goals, but then I guess that's basically goal difference. Should there be bonus point? If you score, say, more than 4 goals, you get 4 points for a win. What's your thought? I know we're both quite traditional when it comes to football, aren't we?
Yeah, no.
You know, the playoffs were a revolutionary movement, weren't they? But
yeah, they were.
Someone had to move away from the norm. What would you do?
I always think that pretty goals should be worth more than a crap goal. Right, that's always my thing with football.
And who decides that?
Well, you know, I mean, sometimes it's just objectively obvious. I mean, I remember when we played Derby, and I think they were Steve McLaren at the time, we drew 1-1. I think it was under Alex Neil, but I might be wrong on that one. But I remember we scored a goal, and it was absolutely brilliant, right? It was like this flowing move down the left-hand side. I think Olsen was involved. I think it was just there's a bit of controversy before the game about the price of the away tickets, which were about 30 quid each. And I thought to myself, yeah, that's too much money. I was kind of on their fans that because I thought it was too much. But I remember we scored this goal, and it was brilliant. And we were chanting at the away fans, that's why it's 30 quid, basically, because, you know, that's what you're paying to see. That's great.
Yeah.
But their equaliser was crap, right? It was a corner where John Ruddy was being half fouled. You know, it's just sort of strong striking from the corner. There's a melee in the box. John Ruddy was being kind of like held by a player, and he ended up punching at his own net. And it was like, that goal shouldn't count as much as our goal, right? It was like, you know, if we won 2-1 or if they won 2-1, fair enough, that's fine. But because it finished 1-1, we should have still got the points because that goal shouldn't have cancelled out our goal. Our goal was far more beautiful.
So would Forestera's goal in that game we talked about, would you say that should have been worth a point?
Yeah, it doesn't work that way around. No. But I think because obviously Vrančić's goal was also beautiful and because their goal was basically handball, I think, you know, the result was fair enough. But like,
you're after a lot of intervention in games and you're basically, points are going to be decided by panels of
yeah, this is it.
How many points a goal should be worth?
This is it. I think it's going to be like gymnastics at the Olympics, you know. I think you should get bonus points for beauty and style. So any Pulis, Sheffield Wednesday, they're screwed, aren't they? There's going to be 0 points every game. For long ball, hoofing out the pitch and nodding it in from a long throw, that's nothing, mate. You don't get anything for that.
I do like that. Would you be a fan of a bonus point for more goals?
No, not really. No. I don't think
so.
In
a way, I think that's a bit unfair because surely defenders are not, isn't it? So why?
Exactly.
Should you get a bonus for goals? And
exactly.
You could almost say bonus point for clean sheets, couldn't you?
I think the game is exciting enough, isn't it? I do think maybe, obviously, I've only really known it as 3 points for a win, but I do think that's probably a good change. I think this game's good, isn't it? We just need to leave the game alone, really, don't we? It's brilliant. Just keep on playing. Ditch the bar, get rid of that, and just keep on playing.
No, I like that. Moving on, we actually played Sheffield away in consecutive league games because we played them away at the end of the 88-89 season.
Okay.
And then we played them away on the opening game of the 89-90 season.
Okay.
Obviously, 88-89 was the year of the Hillsborough disaster, which you don't need to say much about it in terms of it, such a shocking tragedy.
Yeah, horrible, terrible,
Unbelievable what happened up there. First game of the following season was the first day of the Leppins Lane.
Okay.
And it was reopened. So obviously that must have been an awful experience or strange experience for any Norwich fans that went to that game. knowing that they were the first fans back in the Leppins Lane end. We talked about Hillsborough as an iconic venue, and it was obviously one of the main FA Cup semi-final venues. We obviously played at Hillsborough in the 92 semi-final, a game I went to.
Yeah.
And I remember we were in the Leppins Lane end again.
Okay.
Didn't quite feel right or appropriate, really, to be sitting there, you know, just a few years afterwards. The FA Cup semi-finals, they've kind of moved away now from being played at these big traditional club grounds, and they're now at Wembley.
Yeah.
I think I probably know the answer to this, but what are your views on that? Do you think it should be back at neutral venues?
Yeah, basically, yeah. In summary. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, Wembley. I mean, just the thing is with the final, was supposed to be that special event, isn't it? That once...
Yeah.
You know, I just think if you're back at Wembley 2 weeks or a month after playing the semi-finals, it diminish it a little bit. It should be a special event going to Wembley.
Yeah.
It's just very London-centric, isn't it? Especially when football's so big up north. It just feels like dragging everyone all the way down to London for every semi-final. I mean, it's crazy when you've got, like, kind of Man City versus Newcastle and it's going to be played at Wembley.
Yeah.
It's just, why?
They made a lot more sense. It's just a lot better to have these big semis at Villa Parks and big neutral grounds.
I agree.
I mean, what's next? Are they going to play the playoff semis at Wembley?
Yeah, exactly. It's just, I understand that Wembley's possibly underutilised for the amount of money it costs. But no, for me, the final should be sacred, almost.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And then I was just going to touch on a couple of legends wearing green and yellow for the final time at Hillsborough.
Okay.
So
I know the answer to this one.
Two bullet points here. So the first one, April 2009.
Yeah.
Mixed emotions, really. So Dion Dublin, Darren Huckabee made their sort of final Norwich appearances.
Yeah.
Very contrasting emotions for both. So Dublin, he knew it's his final game and he got the tribute from all sides of the ground when he got taken off. I think the Wednesday fans applauded as much as the Norwich fans that day. He's just such a popular person and player, isn't he, Dion Dublin? I mean, everyone likes him and a real proper professional player as well.
Yeah.
Poor old Huckabee didn't quite get the same. I think his fate was unknown and I think it did stick a bit in some Norwich fans' throats.
Yeah.
Really, that he didn't quite get the send-off he deserved. But yeah, final game for those two. I mean, we lost 4-1 and it was kind of a warning for the season ahead, really.
It was, yeah.
Another heavy defeat, May 2018, and this time it's the last we saw of James Maddison.
Yeah.
In a yellow shirt.
That's right.
Again, it was a real gloomy affair, wasn't it? I mean, we lost 4-1. We hadn't had a great season. Maddison limped off early doors, didn't he? Which obviously caused a lot of concern with fans and in the boardroom. Jordan Rhodes scored twice for them.
Yeah.
Although, bizarrely, that was no indication of what would follow because, obviously, the season after, we won the league.
And thrashed them.
Do you remember those sort of two games?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Dion Dublin, we knew, obviously, like you said, we knew he was leaving, and just what a guy. It's just, he just comes across as proper nice guy, doesn't he? Like, a genuine...
Would he come on the podcast?
Oh, I'd love to get him on. I reckon I've got some fascinating stories. Obviously, media savvy these days as well. And I want to say, you know, fair play to him as well for not just going down the traditional punditry route. He's actually gone and expanded his horizons and moved into telly.
Hasn't he?
Is that Homes of the Hammer? I think it's what he does, isn't it? But I'm not watching much, but I think he's brilliant at it, what little I have seen of him.
Too hard working, aren't you, Phil?
Too hard working. Well, something like that. Yeah, basically. But fair play to him. Top bloke. Great servant for the... he started at Norwich, didn't he, as a youth player?
He did, never played. Yeah, started and made his name, obviously, elsewhere. And then came back for a final finale and came back at difficult times. But
he did.
Just really popular, like a real club man again. And,
top bloke. And utility player, striker, centre-half, whatever.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, Darren Huckabee, we didn't know he was going at the time. And that was one of the nails in Rhoda's coffin, wasn't it? I think so. Because that was...
Yeah.
I'm not even saying it was the wrong thing to do, actually. I think Darren Huckabee's...
I don't know.
Years were probably the best years were probably behind him, and it was a difficult decision to make. But to treat a club legend like that, not give him a final farewell, that was not good. That was horrific. And
we talked about Ewan Roberts. He had one at Preston, and then obviously I imagine you were there for Wes's one, Houlihan.
This is it,
and Leeds, wasn't it?
And I think ironically, essentially, Wes Houlihan was basically Huck's replacement, wasn't he? So, but I was there for Houlihan, and that was a really emotional day, you know? Like, it was like close as I come to shedding tears in the football. Obviously, he had the Wes banners up, and he was overwhelmed by it. And Huckabee should have had that, because he's a club legend. There's no doubt about that. He loves the club and has been a good servant for us. And he could have moved on. But
you could argue football's like any industry, you know, it can be quite brutal at times. And
100%.
You can't always give, you know, you can't always give someone a perfect send-off.
No, you can't. You can't. But it felt like this was calculated, didn't it? It didn't feel like this was something.
That's the difference, wasn't it?
Yeah. Which just seemed to sum up Rhoda. He just didn't seem to have much empathy with the fan base.
It's the people management, isn't it?
Basically. Exactly. Yeah. Both players and fans.
And a sad moment for witnessing Maddison's last game, isn't it, to go off injured like that after such an influential season. Shame he couldn't have gone out on a bit of a high. But, yeah, sad end to his career, really, with us, wasn't it?
Yeah. This is it. I think if it wasn't for Maddison that season, there's a fair chance we would have gone down. Oh, not. I don't know about gone down. It would have been a lot tighter than what it was. But he was brilliant that season, wasn't he? And there were some games he won single-handedly, pretty much so. You could also argue, and I did argue the following season, that Maddison disappearing enabled players like Leitner, for example, to kind of take the mantle. And we looked probably a better team. But obviously, I mean, Maddison's a great player. And it was a sad way for him to limp out. Obviously, the club were very concerned about that because they were obviously looking at a bank account thinking, we need to get some money in here. That's fine, we'll sell Maddison. Yeah. Then Maddison limps off a knee injury, then the club are like, oh, we might be bankrupt. So
it's those sort of margins you're talking about now, isn't it?
Yeah, and it seems like, Maddison had a very good PR game, didn't he? Social media-wise. Yeah. And wishing him all the best. Leicester seems like a good club for him.
Yeah, I think it worked out. It's been a good move for everyone, didn't it?
I think so.
A bit like, we talked about Jamal Lewis. We think it's probably the same, where it works out for the club, the fans and the player. Final thoughts. There was a big win in 2002, so the playoff season, we did win 5-0 in Hillsborough. Gary Holt knocked one in off the bar from about 25 yards out.
Oh, nice one.
We lost 1-0 on our first Premier League trip to Hillsborough.
Okay.
Their winner was scored by fullback Nigel Worthington.
Okay, yeah.
In goal, they had Chris Woods.
Yeah.
And in our midfield, we had an ex Wednesday stalwart, Gary Megson.
Okay.
So there was plenty of connections. But yeah, to sum it up, I think it's just a good, proper, big club, isn't it? We talk about big clubs a lot, and it's one of those that...
Well, I think so. And they've had some big players and a big side, and you know what? Someone comes in with a couple of quid, and they could be a serious force to reckon with, couldn't they?
Yeah, and it's one of those clubs. I'd like to see them do well.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it'd be nice to see them get back to the Premier League, and I think you could genuinely say that that's the league they really belong.
I think so.
Being on the pitch doesn't equate to that, but
yeah, no, I think so. But it's one of those things, though. If every club who deserves to be in the Premier League is in it, the Premier League's going to be about 30
a big
clubs
Premier League. Isn't it?
So this is it. So they've got to do it on the pitch, and they've got to find a way of doing it. So I guess that brings on to prediction time.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. What are you going to go for, fam?
Now, I listened back to the Swansea podcast the other day, and I said I was going to pretty much predict every score as 2-1. And that was what I was about to default to again today. So I'm not going to go for that. I'm going to go 3-0 Norwich.
Okay. I need to, I might add these up.
Oh, what, the league table? All right.
seeing where we are whilst watching Saturday night telly, brighten up a bit, I might, add up our scores.
Yeah,
I mean, they're a bit up and down, but I think they're very beatable, aren't they? So you always say we let a goal in, although we have kept a few clean sheets lately. So
I was thinking
I'm going to go 4-0, actually.
Okay, nice. Like it. Confident, positive. Like it.
Cool. All right, brilliant. Well, good to talk to you, Phil. Shame it's not face-to-face. It hasn't quite been the same, has it?
It's not quite been the same. I can't,
That emotional connection.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Although we couldn't cuddle before, could we? So, yeah, good to catch up with you. We'll see how this goes. If it all works and sounds good, it will be published, ready for our public to download and listen to. If it sounds horrendous, then we'll probably postpone it and do it again in the new year. Yeah, but thank you for your contributions as ever, Phil.
Thank you very much for having me once again.
Very valuable. You're going to catch up with Ollie Burton later, are you? Or?
Hopefully, yeah. Go to the pub and talk about... He can talk about the time he played in the UEFA Cup, and I can talk about the time I played against Lowestoft Railway in Division 3 North East. So a lot in common, you know.
There you go. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, mate. Goodbye. Cheers.